You'll find out all about them and use my promo code USA to get 30% off and free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dream Sheet Special, use my promo code USA.
A federal jury has convicted a Florida healthcare executive in a $1 billion Medicare fraud scheme. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
Jurors have convicted 50-year-old Philip Esfremis on 20 criminal counts, the verdict coming in on Friday morning after 4 days of deliberations. And it's one of the biggest such cases in U.S. history. The wealthy Miami Beach businessman operated a network of nursing homes and assisted living facilities across South Florida. Jurors found him guilty of paying kickbacks and bribes to doctors so they would refer patients to his businesses.
He's not in the race yet, but former Vice President Joe Biden is giving strong hints a presidential campaign is imminent.
I'm told by the lawyer that I've got to be careful what I say so that I don't start a clock ticking.
And as far as some women being uncomfortable with his affectionate style,
I realize my responsibility is to not invade the space of anyone who is uncomfortable.
This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
The popular video game Fortnite is changing the way many kids play together and interact. Around 250 million people have played and downloaded the game since it debuted over a year and a half ago. Dr. Sue Varma joined CBS this morning to talk about executive function and when children need to know it's time to get up from the video games and go outside and play, and also some of the addictive qualities that surround these video games.
Look, it really depends on the child, right? You have to know the child. Do they have the ability to be able to say no? And really what it comes down to is, do they have a more compelling activity, right? Because a lot of times kids are going to say, why do I have to stop? What's more interesting than this? I don't find homework interesting. Yeah. But I think you have to give them what we call a healthy diet of other pleasurable activities. Nothing can replace the human connection. If your kids really enjoy spending time with you, with friends, reward that as behavior. Say, can we go to your favorite movie? Can we go to a play? Can we go outdoor hiking? Can we go rock climbing?
And Varma also says,
we do need to give them opportunities and alternatives and to give them choices. And really the brain, the executive function, is developing up until the age of 25. You're going to have a lot of really mature 13-year-olds, and really you have to take it case-by-case basis.
Dr. Varma also believes that children who are depressed or have anxiety may be using video games as a form of coping and also avoidance. Please remember you can find us online at usaradio.com or on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Good afternoon. For any of you who are desperately waiting to hear the legal news, I do have to apologize. Unfortunately, I won't even give all the reasons. But the weather didn't help. If you haven't been out today, you're lucky because it is what I would certainly call a raw day, to say the very least. Rainy, nasty. It said light rain. It's been more than light rain some of the day. And guess what? They predicted it correctly. 90% rain this afternoon. And tonight, rain and patchy fog. And they said a high today about 44 degrees. Believe me, it's not gotten that high. And by, as I said tonight, 90% of rain and patchy fog. And then there's a chance of rain and patchy fog in the morning. And then it should be mostly sunny tomorrow, partly sunny on Sunday. Tomorrow should be much warmer, at least if you're comparing it to today, about a 20-degree increase, 66 degrees, and about 68 degrees on Sunday. So Saturday afternoon, Sunday should be nice. If you don't know about it, there is the paper shredding event tomorrow in Hunterdon County for all Hunterdon County residents. Great way to get rid of all of the papers that we should not be, I should say documents that we should not be throwing in the trash. Nobody should throw any documents with private information, certainly no bank records, but even utility bills, anything that would give away some of your personal information. And Hunterdon County is great. They have this paper shredding, no cost, at the county complex tomorrow from about 9 until 12. And, you know, you can take all your personal documents that you want shredded, and they will shred them for you. So what's happening today with respect to not talking about the news right now, but I did want to bring you some of the legal news. And so, interestingly, the revamp of the bail system in New Jersey has really made New Jersey's criminal justice system more not only humane and equitable, but it's also substantially lowering the jail population by cutting the amount of time that low-risk defendants spend behind bars while awaiting trial. This, of course, is a win-win for everyone because the cost of keeping people in jail is really huge. I mean, it's a huge expense. And in the past, many defendants who were charged with, not heavy assault, not obviously attempt to commit murder or those crimes, they were, frankly, what they were is usually people who are poor. They couldn't make bail. And these are low-risk defendants, obviously. They're not high-risk defendants. And I'm sure there will be some mistakes from time to time. But the fact is it's lowering the jail population. And the incredible thing, if you look around the country, is that many defendants spend time in jail up to a year, maybe even more than a year, and then they're found not guilty. And so here they've spent all that time in jail because they refuse to plead guilty or they refuse to enter any kind of a plea. And then, in fact, I don't want to say they're exonerated because a not guilty plea is not really an exoneration. What it means is that a jury or judge has not found them guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And that doesn't mean they're innocent. And that's always interesting when people claim that someone was innocent. Maybe innocent, but the fact is they weren't able to be proven guilty beyond the reasonable doubt. So that was, that's very interesting. I don't know the exact statistics, but it's certainly significant. It's very significant in this state, in areas, for example, Essex County, Union County, areas where many people were spending months in jail waiting for trial. Certainly there's some significant legislation this week. We have to look at some of that pending and the impact. There's certainly an impact on foreclosures and employment settlements and also physician-assisted suicide. I'll try to get you talk a little bit more about this. I do have some information, and at least I think I do, some more specific information. Excuse me for taking a moment to find that, but there's some fairly significant situations, legislation. There's a Senate bill which costs, not costs, it's about foreclosure mediation program, and this bill codifies, or codifies, I should say, the judiciary's foreclosure mediation program and makes some adjustments to the program. And this is a program that affords homeowners an opportunity to mediate after receiving a notice of intention to foreclose. And this is waiting the governor's signature. And just as an aside, the New Jersey State Bar Association supports the bill with amendments to ensure good faith mediation, and that is by ensuring that both parties come to the table with authorization to settle. Because one of the problems in this mediation program, up until this time, there was a mediation program, but whoever was there or participating on behalf of the mortgagees, meaning the banks, the people who held the mortgages, really didn't have any authority to settle. So a program like that is only as good as the good faith on both sides. So if this is signed into law, a homeowner has to be given written notice of the option to participate in the foreclosure mediation program when they receive a notice of intention to foreclose. Then another notice must be issued upon the filing of a mortgage foreclosure complaint against the eligible property. And there will be no fees to the homeowner to participate. And, of course, that's a good thing because you know, if it costs money, someone who's having problems with their mortgage probably is not going to be able to afford the fees. So and as I said, to participate in the program, and that then both parties are expected to mediate in good faith with authority to reach a mutually acceptable loan modification. So that's the point of this mediation program, to reach a mutually acceptable loan modification, loan workout, refinancing agreement, or other resolution. And then the failure to mediate in good faith could lead to penalties on the defaulting party. So that's really significant. Unless there's some chance of some penalties, frankly, the banks aren't going to participate in good faith. The mortgage companies aren't going to participate in good faith. You know, unless someone wants their property to be foreclosed, you know, there's no reason that the homeowner would not participate in good faith. They want some resolution, most likely to either sell the home or stay in the home. If they wanted to, you know, allow the foreclosure to go forward, they would just, you know, not fight it, sign either allow a short sale or sign a deed in lieu of foreclosure. So this is really, hopefully, if it's signed, we'll put some teeth into a program that has, from at least my understanding, has not been very successful in the past. So then there's another Senate bill, medical aid in dying for the terminally ill, and that is terminally ill, and that is a controversial bill. I guess we can understand why. It would permit a physician-assisted suicide for the terminally ill It was presented to the governor on March 25th, and I'm giving you the New Jersey State Bar position on these bills. And the Bar Association did support the bill because it gives people in the end stages of terminal illness the option to avoid suffering with the assistance of health care providers. And there is a strong opposition to the bill, and that remained, you know, the concern there. And the concern is that it could lead to a slippery slope towards euthanasia. And the bill, however, is expected to be signed by the governor. And under the bill, and this is what's important, an adult with the capacity to make health care decisions who has been determined by his or her physician to be terminally ill may obtain medication he or she may self-administer to terminate his or her life. So what's important here is, first of all, someone has to have the capacity to make health care decisions. So obviously a person with serious dementia is not going to have that capacity. Someone who really isn't physically able to administer medication themselves is probably just not going to be a candidate for that. But what this does is it just simply says that that person who has a capacity and second prong of that has been determined by the physician to be terminally ill, when those two, when that, those two prong precedents are, I shouldn't say precedents, they're really not precedents, when that, when they're, a person is able to meet that two-prong test, then the person may obtain medication and may self-administer the medication to terminate his or her life. So I'm assuming that the question would be, of course, to get the medication, they'd have to have a prescription. So that's where the physicians come into play. And then a number of safeguards were put into place to address concerns about the safety and integrity of the process. And I mean, this is well thought out. You may be hearing there's a lot of fire trucks going by, so I don't know what's happening, but something is. But these are the safeguards. The patient must have a prognosis of 6 months or less to live in order to request and be prescribed the medication under this bill. That's number one. Two, terminal illness is defined under the bill as an irreversible disease that has been medically confirmed and will result in the patient's death within 6 months. So I guess people who are not in favor of the bill can say, well, whoever knows, that's in God's hands. You know, people have been diagnosed as terminally ill and then they make a miraculous recovery. But in this is what the bill requires. So, and obviously nobody has to do it if they don't want to. The bill also requires patients suffering from a terminal illness to first verbally request a prescription from an attending physician, followed by a second verbal request at least 15 days later. So in other words, this is something that you can't just one day say, I've had it, and you know, give me the medication. So it has to be a verbal request and then a second verbal request. And I'm sure there's a lot of argument whether it should be in writing or verbal. Now, the attending physician would have to offer a chance to rescind the request. So in other words, even if somebody asks, the physician has to, before prescribing the medication, would have to say, are you sure? Do you want to do this? You know, maybe you want to think about it. You know, let's talk about this. Maybe you should see a psychologist. You know, are you feeling pressured by family members? Do you have any religious, I'm not saying they'd have to say this, but do you have any religious concerns about this? Because certainly we know that certain religions, you know, more than frown on suicide. So with all those precautions, what people are saying is if, in fact, someone wants to end their life, don't want to go on suffering, or whatever reason, terminally ill, they could be asking for a prescription medication to, I guess what some people would say is die gracefully. At least, you know, and I think most of the people in these situations would let their family know. This is not the kind of, you know, shocking suicide that we often hear about. In any event, let me take a short break, play some of the from our sponsors, and kind of gotten behind in that, and we'll be back shortly.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
In March, 196,000 jobs were created, the Department of Labor announced on Friday. The unemployment rate held steady at 3.8%. Financial advisor John Lakefield reacts to those numbers on Fox Business.
I think it was a terrific number. I agree with John and Mike and what Dagan are talking about. This is not a precursor to a recession. I think there's definitely a global slowdown going on, and I think there's probably a slowdown in the United States going on. But when you have a reversion to the mean of jobs numbers, we've had this for the last 8 years straight almost, you see that continuing. This is not a precursor. It certainly doesn't appear to a recession.
President Trump is in Calexico, California, taking part in a border security roundtable. Before leaving for that roundtable, the president says he's holding off on his threat to close the southern border because Mexico is stepping up, but also says,
I never changed my mind at all. I may shut it down at some point.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Lowe's knows you're the pro who does it right to find more ways to save because your business depends on it. We do it right, too, with savings every day, plus even more deals during our Spring Black Friday sale. Get $40 off 5-gallon buckets of select paint and stains via Lowe's gift card rebate. Buy three or more Purdy brushes and get 15% instant savings. And get up to 35% off select appliance special values. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Paint and stain offer valid through 410. Purdy and appliance offers valid through 417. Exclusions apply. See store for details. U.S. only.
The best sleep of my life has been since I got a MyPillow and since I got my Giza Dream sheets. I have to tell you, I've slept in some great hotels in my time, but nothing like these Giza Dreams sheets. Now go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams Sheet Special. You'll find out all about them and use my promo code USA to get 30% off and free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams Sheet Special. Use my promo code USA.
A federal jury has convicted a Florida healthcare executive in a $1 billion Medicare fraud scheme. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
Jurors have convicted 50-year-old Philip Esfermis on 20 criminal counts, the verdict coming in on Friday morning after 4 days of deliberations, and it's one of the biggest such cases in U.S. history. The wealthy Miami Beach businessman operated a network of nursing homes and assisted living facilities across South Florida. Jurors found him guilty of paying kickbacks and bribes to doctors so they would refer patients to his businesses.
He's not in the race yet, but former Vice President Joe Biden is giving strong hints a presidential campaign is imminent.
I'm told by the lawyer that I've got to be careful what I say so that I don't start a clock ticking.
And as far as some women being uncomfortable with his affectionate style,
I realize my responsibility is to not invade the space of anyone who is uncomfortable.
This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215.
Okay, we're back. I'm not going to talk politics except to let you know what's happening and some of the new legislation that's being proposed. So the next one is a Senate bill. Actually, the governor signed this one into law as a bill would ban provisions in employment contracts that waive the right to conceal the details relating to discrimination, retaliation, or harassment claims. Now, I have to say that the Bar Association voiced strong concerns about the bill's efficacy in protecting victims and offered a number of amendments to address these concerns. The bill that was signed into law, however, does not contain any of these amendments. So what happens is the bill voids non-disclosure agreements as against public policy and unenforceable. So it further deems confidentiality provisions unenforceable against an employer if the employee publicly reveals sufficient details of the claim so that the employer is reasonably identifiable. That's very interesting. So now what the Bar Association offered was what we called employee choice amendments to give the victim the choice to enter into a confidentiality agreement, citing concerns that a victim may not want any disclosure of the facts leading to such a claim. Other concerns raised by interest groups relate to the ban on arbitration of such claims, which they believe is unconstitutional in light of the recent United States Supreme Court decisions. Now, I guess the concern about giving the victim the choice to enter the confidentiality agreement is that there could be a lot of pressure on the victim. So, anyway, this is a status report on recently passed and pending litigation, and I will try to bring more of that to you in the future. As I said, anyone who is possibly concerned about foreclosure, if you know of anyone, that's really very important to try to bring that statute to their attention. So the New Jersey Division on Civil Rights announced a settlement of an unlawful housing discrimination complaint lodged by an Orthodox Jewish homeowner against the association governing his gated community. And he claims it failed to accommodate his and fellow Orthodox Jewish neighbors' religious practices. Don't really know much more about it than that. I'm not sure what their complaint was, but that case, in fact, was settled. So I'm sure that anyone who has any interest in something like that would certainly be able to find out the details of the settlement, unless, as I said, it's confidential. And so that's really problematic because it sometimes these confidential settlements really, you know, it's a problem because other people can't find out about them. Well, I'm not going to go into all of those reasons why that, you know, is problematic. So as far as cases, other cases this week that are of interest, as I said, the bail, 2 years bail reform news is probably really top of the list. And certainly for young adults who really don't have any money to make bail, very important. If they're not any, you know, if it's a low-risk situation, maybe first-time offense, person didn't want to go into PTI, but, you know, interesting, I think that is what we expected, and it would be interesting to see the exact dollar amount, if they can figure that out, of the savings. Now, of course, it depends, but it depends on, well, actually, it almost would be calculated from the amount that they calculate it costs to keep a prisoner. For example, what is the daily cost to keep a prisoner in jail? Now that Hunterdon County does not have a jail and we house our prisoners in Somerset County, what is this costing Hunterdon County? So for every person who's not detained pre-trial, they have a cost per day, per person in the jail. And there are some savings if there are more people in jail, obviously. There are some savings per person. But the interesting thing would be, what does it cost? And so taxpayers are saving money, provided that services are in fact or personnel are assigned somewhere else. I'm not saying they should be fired, but assigned somewhere else if they no longer need them because the prison population is down. There was a proof for publication, a personal injury case. Might be of some interest to people. That was done, let's see. That one was, I think it was decided yesterday. And it was Wellman versus Road Runner Sports, Inc. And the defendants moved to compel the plaintiff to attend two medical examinations without condition, specifically without attendance of a third party and without the right to record the examination. And in this case, the plaintiff's parents cross-moved for a protective order that permitted recording of any defense medical examination of the plaintiff and permitted them and or the plaintiff's counsel to attend such examination. So in this case, the law division, and this is a law division reported case, denied the defendant's motion and granted the parents' cross-motion. And the interesting thing about this is the court noted that plaintiff was a 7-year-old child and that plaintiff's parents had met their burden to show why they should be entitled to attend and record defense medical examinations of the plaintiff. And isn't it interesting that we usually, when we're talking about plaintiffs and defendants, we're talking about adults. But here's a 7-year-old, and what the defendants wanted is that she be compelled, he or she, I can't remember right now, be compelled to attend medical examinations without her parents being there and not being allowed to have them recorded. So specifically, the court noted that examinations would involve a medical exam by a young child by two doctors the child had never met, with doctors hired by the parties, meaning the doctors were legally adverse to the child, who later may be called to testify against the child. So in other words, the judge was looking, hey, what's fair here? And the court noted that having the plaintiff's parents or her counsel present would be critical if there was a dispute about what happened during the examinations. As the child, you know, plaintiff, but the child's young age would make her unable to counter the testimony of an expert witness. The court further held that the defendants failed to show why the parents or the recording of the examination would somehow interfere with the examinations. And as I said, this is a law division case. Rarely do we have law division cases published, and that's an important one. And I think that certainly any parents would agree. I mean, who would want our young child to have to go and be examined by two different doctors? Child doesn't know them. And of course, then the real problem is at the time of trial, how does, at least from an attorney standpoint, how could I possibly cross-examine these physicians without having somebody at least been in the room witnessing and the right to have a recording of it so I could take a look at what was happening? And remember, these are not neutral doctors. These are doctors who are hired to defend against these cases. Anyway, this is interesting. I think that was a very interesting case. But then maybe it's just for us legal wonks. So the Third Circuit, and as we know, there's a district court in New Jersey, and then the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit has ruled that Ramapo College in New Jersey, North New Jersey, and several of its officers are entitled to sovereign immunity from a lawsuit filed by a former student who said she was sexually assaulted on campus. However, they extended immunity to both the college and the administrators in that case. Significant. That is obviously a significant issue. Now, a former CBS Employees Federal Credit Union CEO said he was able to steal and conceal his $40 million embezzlement for 20 years because the auditors didn't really know what to look for. Isn't that amazing? So here's someone who for 20 years was able to steal $40 million, and he was a CBS employee. CBS Employee Federal Credit Union. He was their CEO. And so he was able to take $40 million, steal $40 million from his employer and over a period of 20 years. When somebody says 20 years, but still, that's $2 million, average $2 million a year. And that's apparently what he said in documents that were filed in federal court. So there's a couple other cases approved for publication, and a number of them, of course, that are reported but are not published. There was one, it was a labor law, an insurance law case, and in this case it was Liberty Mutual Insurance versus Rodriguez, and the defendant Rodriguez appealed from the trial court's grant of the plaintiff's application for reimbursement of workers' compensation benefits, plaintiff, and that was Liberty Mutual Insurance, paid to the defendant from the defendant's third-party recovery, based on the fee ratio calculated for the overall settlement rather than the sliding scale set forth by the rule. So apparently, in this case, the defendant was injured during his employment with his employer, and he was insured by the plaintiff Liberty Mutual. And the defendant retained a law firm to represent him in his workers' compensation claim and also his tort claim against a third party. And the firm, defendant's firm, would receive a fee under the there are rules. In other words, there are certain rules with respect to lawyers collecting fees. So the firm later obtained a settlement from the tortfeasor for $1.2 million, and plaintiff accordingly asserted its right to reimbursement of its workers' compensation lien from the settlement. In other words, they wanted to be paid back. They're in their insurance company insuring this, but since the defendant got all this money, they want to be paid back. So the defendant's firm sent plaintiff a check net of a 33.33% legal fee, which is what the firm was charging. And the plaintiff argued that the defendant's firm was only entitled to a fee calculated at 30.56%, because that was equal to the overall percentage paid by the defendant in fees. So the trial court granted the plaintiff's application for reimbursement, rejecting the defendant's reliance on case law, and that held that a lien should be subject to the one-third fee. There are these regulations. In any event, the appeal, the appellate division affirmed the trial court's decision. So the court ruled that case law applying a fee ratio calculated on the whole settlement rather than upon the sliding scale was a controlling authority. I'd have to read the entire case to really understand it, and I'm a feeling that you do too. So the question is that not necessarily the percentage, but what was that going to be based on? Actually, there's some good news. Fewer lawsuits are being filed in New Jersey state courts, and apparently that's been going on for at least a decade. Kind of hard to believe. Where was I? Kind of situation about, wow, we didn't think so. We thought there were more lawsuits. So now there was an owner of a restaurant in Liberty State Park that was temporarily closed for several weeks by court order after Superstorm Sandy. Yes, it's still raising its ugly head. And they have a claim for payment under the civil authority provision in its insurance policy regulated by the appellate court. So apparently there was not necessarily a loophole, but there was a basis for them to proceed. Tax case, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out something that might be of some general interest. And actually we're getting towards the end of the show. So maybe we'll, just come back after we play the news and talk about some sports. Although I have to say there was a failure to diagnose case settled for $2.35 million in Ocean County. However, I wouldn't want to be the person on whose behalf it was awarded, since the person died, and it was a wrongful death suit by the plaintiff's family. And, of course, if anybody is interested, it's Rabkin versus Varma, V-A-R-M-A. Okay, well, we'll play the news, and I know I did play the news a short time ago, so let's play it. I hope they've changed it, but if not, you'll be listening to the same news. Stay tuned, and I will also play. Tell you what, I'm going to play some of the spots that I didn't get to because I was late, and today, and then we'll come back and do this again with the sports guys.
Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al